Milt, let's go back a little bit now and talk about your childhood, your parents' activities, and anything else you remember.
Well, I think I mentioned this too. I had a very warm childhood. My parents were very understanding, and even though I disagreed with them many times, they were wonderful, and they really had a knack of appealing to us. My father, of course, never touched us. All he had to do was just give us a look, and we knew exactly what we had to do. My mother was the one who was a little emotional, and of course, she would occasionally give us a little knock, you know. But somehow or other, we feared our father more than our mother. We got around our mother very easily. But at any rate, we had a Jewish bookstore, and the store, as I said, my father was traditional but nationalistic, so he wasn't really that religious. And the store was really open on Saturdays, I remember as a child. But from the moment my grandmother came to live with us, that store was closed, out of deference to my grandmother. And you know, the funny thing is that my grandmother didn't want to come to live with us. She lived with my uncle, who was a rabbi, in New York. And when my uncle married and moved to Detroit, she moved with him to Detroit, and she lived with her son and daughter-in-law. Then my uncle moved to Portland, Oregon, and she couldn't travel. So she went to live with my aunt, who lived in Rochester, New York. And she knew that my uncle, my aunt's husband, worked on the Sabbath, but she always said that he worked because he worked for someone else. He had no other alternative. While my father had a store, and he could close it. So she went to live with my aunt, with my aunt in Rochester. But when my aunt moved to California, as a last resort, she came to us. And from the day she came to our house, that store was closed. Friday evening until Saturday evening and all the holidays. And afterwards, I remember she used to say that she could never have had a son-in-law so wonderful as my father, that he did everything in deference to her wishes. She was very, very religious. And I had a little to do with her, I remember. Oh, I had just started to teach. And I remember my first check that I got, I went out and I bought one of those big, those radios, that they had radios, and it was on Friday night, and I wanted to hear a certain program. And our house was built so that the living room was all in the front, on the second floor, above the store, living room, and then there was a dining room, and then there was another room, which we used as a hallway, so to speak, with a bathroom, and then another room which led into a kitchen, and off the kitchen there was another bedroom, and my grandmother was over in the bedroom over here. So I thought by closing all the doors, my grandmother wouldn't hear the radio, and I was just dying to hear a certain program. So I turned it on, and I was very deep in listening to him, and all of a sudden the living room door opened, and there was my grandmother, and I ran to turn off the radio, and she says to me, "Mein Kind," she says, "you already turned it on. What, are you going to have a second affair and turn it off?" But it was already done, so, you know. But she never said another word to me about it, and I never again put on that radio on Friday night. Never. My father told me afterwards, he told me in no uncertain terms that I should have known better. That she was in the house, I had no right to put on that radio. Well, by that time I was working, I felt, I was a little upset with my father. I can see his point now, but I couldn't see it then. But we were very careful not to hurt my grandmother, and we really all listened to her and did as she wanted. My mother was really, outside of my uncle, was her favorite daughter, and she loved my mother very much, and we really didn't want to hurt her. She was a sick woman and so forth. My father's store is something that as I look back, it was really something. I can still see that store. My father, when you came into the center of the store, as you walked in, to the left was a stand that held the English newspapers, the press, the Sun, was then called the Post-Dispatch or something, the Sun Telegraph. I can't remember what, Sun Telegraph, I guess. And in back of where my father used to stand with his arms over the stand, in back of him were shelves with the Jewish papers. And on the other side of the store were all the magazines laid out on the counter. And my father would be standing there and talking to people. Never saw anybody come in and just take a magazine and walk out. Never saw it. My mother, it came to the point that my mother was in the store from 7 o'clock in the morning till 12 o'clock at night, just running back all the time to make the meals and coming right out, because we had a kitchen at that time, downstairs also. And incidentally, I must tell you something. We had two kitchens. Why? When my grandmother moved in with us, my mother wasn't sure whether she would really believe that our house was strictly kosher, so she made a second kitchen upstairs for my grandmother. So we had actually two kitchens, one downstairs and one upstairs.
Did your grandmother use the one upstairs?
Oh, yes. She was not. She couldn't walk steps anyways. So she used the one upstairs. And I remember very well that we had a visitor from Israel. My mother's first cousin, he was his brother was the head of the yeshiva of Mir, and he had come here. And when he came here, she knew him as a child in Europe, I guess. And she said to me, in Yiddish, of course, she said to him at the time, that she knows that he's strict, and although we keep a kosher home and so forth and so on, she showed him where all our different dishes were. He might not believe her. So she took him, I'll never forget it, she took him to Rabbi Leiter, who lived at that time two doors up from the Iron Coffin settlement, and he told him that he could eat in our house because we had a strictly kosher home. She had to take my cousin to show him where we bought our meat at Hausmann's and so forth and so on, so it was satisfactory. But the discussions that took place in my father's store, and I think that's where I really developed a love for community and for a really Jewish life. Everybody came into our store, from the most ardent Jewish communist to the most ardent Jewish traditionalist, and every atheist there was in town, and every firm believer. And on top of it all, my father had a friend. It's really peculiar to say friend, but he had gone to the yeshiva with my father as a boy in Europe, and somehow or other he had come to America and he was converted. He was a missionary. There was a mission house on Pride Street near Fifth Avenue, and he was there, but he used to come into our store and argue with my father and argue points in the Gemara.
He was a missionary to be a Catholic or a Protestant.
That's right. I'll never forget him. Used to come on Friday nights to the store. A store was closed, but they'd stand in the store and talk and argue about the Gemara. And my father couldn't get over him, and he couldn't get over my father. And I don't know why he converted. I never asked. It never bothered me. My mother couldn't stand him because he was, and she said, don't talk to him and don't bother him. Your father wants to talk to him, let him talk to him, but don't. So I never questioned why he became a mission, why he converted, I don't know. But he used to come, as did, by the way, Rabbi Goldenson, who my father knew from Europe as a child. So I'll tell you, we had all kinds of people, and the political discussions that went on there, it seemed to me that Zionism was born in our store. That's all they argued about, was the Zionist movement. And of course we had socialist Zionists, at that time the Politzion, and regular Zionists and revisionists. My father really was a revisionist, a follower of Jabotinsky. I think in his heart he was a follower, and therefore if he were living today he would just love Menachem Begin. And the discussions that took place in our store on every facet of Jewish life, and so much so that when I my father was interested only that I should go, because I somehow or other I must have gotten most of that feeling. I was the oldest. He thought that I should go to Palestine to live, and I had intended to go. I remember in 1937 I made inquiry, and I was going to go on Aliyah, And that's when my husband and I decided that we would be married the following year, and I didn't go. My father was very disappointed. He said we should have gone afterwards then.
How does it come that you spend so much time in the store?
Well, as I tell you, my father was always so busy talking that everybody walked out with it. So anybody who was one of the kids who were around had to just take over and sell, you know, be part of the store. I mean, my mother, they were tired, and my mother couldn't go into the store. So if I were home and I had time, I did, or my brothers or my sister. My sister really was stuck with most of it. But I used to come into the store, and I got so much in the habit of listening that there were times when I also forgot that there were customers in the store. I'd stand there and listen to the conversations, you know. And my father, I don't know, I met Rabbi Stephen Wise in our store, and Louis Lipsky, the journalist. I remember meeting Judge Mayor Rothenberg. They'd come in for a Zionist convention, and at that time the Zionist Institute was on Center Avenue, a few blocks up on the corner of Green and Center. And I met all these people, and I even remember meeting, he was a tremendous speaker. In those days they called him a Magid, Maslianski. I think he became the editor of the Tageblatt, I think. I met him, and he had a booming voice, and he used to talk about tradition, you know, and Zionism. And I loved that store. I'll tell you the truth. Maybe I ran out purposely to stay in the store because I loved to listen to discussions. And my father would hold discussions until 3 in the morning. They just stood in the store and talked all the time.
Was there a conflict between his religious belief and his Zionism?
No, not at all.
How did he envision religious practice in Israel?
As I told you, my father was not really...
Right.
Yeah, he was a traditionalist, but not,
right.
You know. Mm-hmm. But he felt that Palestine, because in his days it was Palestine, should be set on a... Jewish basis, with all the fundamental Jewish laws. And I have to tell you something else about my father. When the Montefiore Hospital was being built on Fifth Avenue, there was a question about a kosher kitchen then, even then, because I guess some of the money was coming from the state, and they couldn't, after all, it had to be non-sectarian. So they had a panel to talk about it, and my father was chosen as the nonpartisan part of the panel, but he voted for the kosher kitchen, and his vote carried it, and that, you know. And he was a very active, he ran as a delegate for the first American Jewish Congress. He lost that first time, but he won the second time, and he went with, that's another interesting story, with Dr. Nathan Isaacs, who was then a professor of law at the University of Pittsburgh. He went from Pitt to Harvard. And Dr. Isaacs came from a very strict religious family in Cincinnati. And they went to Philadelphia to the conference. And my father used to tell us that they had gone out for lunch one day to a Jewish restaurant. And Dr. Isaacs said to the fellow who came over to them, he said, I'd like to see your kitchen. So the fellow thought he wanted to wash his hands. He says, well, there's a washroom. He said, no, I want to go into the kitchen. So my father went to Dr. Isaac, and Dr. Isaac looked around the kitchen, and he said, where are the dairy dishes? Where are the meat dishes? The stove? And when he was satisfied, it was a kosher restaurant, then he sat down and he ate.
When was this that you that your father went to this convention?
The second time, it must have been in 19, the first time was 1918 when he lost. I suspect around 1922. We even have a picture that he used as he had to run for office to be a delegate. So we had a picture taken of himself, you know, and all the things. And then
what was involved in winning the election?
I guess the votes of the Jews, who, you know, there were many Jews who were against it, I'm sure, the American Jewish Congress. They felt it was putting religion above your Americanism. But those who weren't, and I think it would be similar like now, voting for the delegates for the Zionist conference in Israel. I mean, I received my ballot already to vote for them. I think that's what was involved then, too. I look back and I don't think today you have that feeling at all.
What else did he do for the American Jewish Congress?
Oh, besides being a delegate?
Yes.
I know he was their most outspoken one, at least in the neighborhood. He always spoke for a combined vote of confidence in Jewish affairs, and he used to go to speak at the Iron Coffin settlement. They used to invite him for cultural meetings that the people held there, and he spoke, and he always spoke on that one topic, that it's based, of course, on the sentence, and that's where I got this sentence the first time, in the Hillel sentence, if I'm not for myself, then who will be? And if not now, when? And that's exactly why what my father felt, that if we don't fight for our rights as Jews, then who will do it for us? And if not now, when? And that was his philosophy, and that's mine.
How long did your father live?
Was my father passed?
Did he live to see?
Yes. Thank God he lived to see the creation of the state. And as a matter of fact, I think I mentioned to you that I was a secretary for David Ben-Gurion when he was here for the bond drive. And
when was that?
In 1951. Mm-hmm. And when I made inquiries about going on Aliyah, my father was so happy. And when we dropped the idea, he was very angry with my teacher, Mr. Beer, who talked me out of it. But he lived to see that state. He was very happy.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Did he ever attend another meeting of the American Jewish Congress?
In 1928, I think he went, and that was it. That was about it. My father became sick, afflicted with asthma, and a terrible case of asthma, and he really couldn't do very much afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
But he was a very staunch Zionist.
Well, it's really been an inspiring talk that we've had with you. Is there anything else that you'd care to add?
I've talked so much about my father that you would think that I had no special feeling toward my mother. But my mother was a wonderful woman, but she was more than most of all a wonderful wife. Whatever my father said, you know, went. And but he gave in to her as far as her religion is concerned, because originally she was the religious one, you see. Whatever she wanted went. And even when our store was open, he used to say to my mother, Annie, go, it's already time to bench lift. Don't come in till tomorrow night, you know. And in the holidays, too. She had a great effect on all of us. I think she, with all her emotionalism and so forth, she really gave us a wonderful feeling of family life. I had marvelous parents, that's all I can say. And I never really knew my grandfather, but my mother's father. But he was a marvelous man. And my grandmother, of course, lived with us. He died in 1917, suddenly. And my mother, when I remember I used to talk to my mother, she loved her father more than her mother, you see. And she used to talk about her father all the time. Now, we have a picture of my grandfather. That I had a cousin who was a Reformed rabbi in Milwaukee, Rabbi Joseph Barron. And Joe took a picture of my grandfather, and he took one of my grandmother, but my grandmother was so frum, she grabbed that picture and tore it into pieces. She said, you're not allowed to take any pictures. But my grandfather was liberal enough at the time to say, all right, you already took it, let it be. But my father's parent, my grandfather on my father's side, was exiled to Siberia. He was the one who wouldn't come to America, wouldn't live here because it wasn't firm enough, went back, and he was exiled to Siberia, and he died there. I remember when my father got the news, it was already some time afterwards, and he sat shiva for his father. His mother, of course, died. I told you that story. She died. She just died of grief for her brother. So she died before my father came to America. So I really didn't know them, but I knew my grandmother, and of course, I always heard from my mother about her father, and you would have thought that her father was the malach, the angel, and I guess he was, because he was very understanding, and as I told you, too, he never saw his older brothers. He had a tremendous family, by the way. When my mother came to America with her father, his sister, my mother's aunt, was quite wealthy. Her son was a manufacturer, lived in an elevator apartment on Grand Street back in 1902, in those days. Anyways, he had a sister in New York, and he had my grandfather had a brother in Chicago, and of course he left brothers in Europe, and he had a sister who was married to the Rosh Yeshiva of Slobodkin, Rabbi Finkel. And they were large. My grandfather was the youngest, and maybe that's one of the reasons why he never saw his older brother. Because when he was born, his brother was married already and living in Russia, in the depths of Russia.
I was going to ask you a question. You were referring to some uncles who had moved first, you said,
Chicago?
It was to Rochester and then to California, and another one who went to Oregon. What was the motivation to be moving west at that time?
My uncle, my mother's brother, was a rabbi, and so he went where he was sent by the Jewish Theological Seminary. That's why he moved. And my other uncle, his wife was my aunt, my mother's sister. They lived in Rochester, and when he died, my mother's sister decided to go to California, and that's how she got to California.
Did I hear you mention that you had a cousin who was a Reformed rabbi?
Yeah, Rabbi Baron Joe. I knew him well. He used to come to our store all the time. Joe, he's my mother's first cousin. His mother and my grandmother and my grandfather were brother and sister. Oh, yes. He died a few years ago, Joe. But he was I think that he broke his parents' heart when he became a Reformed Jewish rabbi. They wanted him to be, I guess, an Orthodox. But Joe was liberal, but he was a wonderful man. He wrote a book, which I have here, Treasury of Jewish Quotations. And my mother's family seems to be a rabbinical family, let's put it that way.
Most of them were Orthodox.
Yes. Although my uncle, my mother's brother, is a conservative rabbi, the one who lives in California now. And also, with him, there's a story. My uncle was always a great science fiction lover. That was his love of his life as a child. And when he was ready to go into Columbia University, he told his father, my grandfather, he wanted to be an engineer. And my grandfather almost had a fit. An engineer? What kind of Jewish boy becomes an engineer? And you go away from your religion and so forth. So they compromised. He said, okay, he says, I'll go and be a rabbi. But I'm not going to be an Orthodox rabbi. I'll be a conservative rabbi. So he went to the Jewish Theological Seminary.
The family.
Yeah.
The
family. Yes.
Is there anything else you'd like to add?
I don't know. Except that I wish that, I hope my children will have the same view about us as we have about our parents. I doubt it. I doubt it very much. But I don't think we were very different than the most. I think most people of my generation look back on their families, even though they were poor, and I don't consider our family poor at the time, but even though they were poor and struggling, I think that they look back with love, because there was a much warmer Jewish family life in those days than there is today.
I think all of us who are parents join you in that hope.
Yeah.
And thank you very, very much.
Oh, you're quite welcome. I gave me pleasure really to look back. I don't get much chance to look back on them. Yeah, a younger boy is going to be married 10 years on Sunday, and we're going to New York for the 10th anniversary celebration. And my older son doesn't bother him one bit. I said, David, he can't go. He'll be working, so he couldn't go anyhow. But I said, David. So he says, he's married 10 years. Wonderful. He said, look how many friends I have that are after 1 year, 2 years are separated. He says, wonderful. I'm glad for him. I'll send him a card and wish him luck.
What do you think the young people today could do to try to recreate that old family feeling? Is it possible again, or is it just a lost time?
I don't know whether it's possible. You know, unless you skip a generation, I think they see that lack of family warmth in their own parents, and they've been brought up that way. Maybe you can skip a generation. Now, since Roots came out, people are looking and trying to. But you know, life is very complex and complicated today. And there's kids today, they get jobs and they move away. They move far away from their families. And you know, if you move away from your family and you're away 2, 3, 4 years, I said, you're bound to lose contact. Not maybe with your parents, But if you have uncles and cousins, you're going to lose contact because you're making other friends where you live. And, you know, as life becomes more complex, it's very hard. You know, the shtetl life in Europe, as horrible as it was, maybe, economically, was a marvelous life for the Jew. It kept the Jews together. You know? And when I think about the shtetl, and I read about it, rather, I think how wonderful it was for the Jews who had the privilege of living there, even though they were so poor and they had so many pogroms and what have you. But it must have been a privilege to live so close with other Jews and to know that if your next-door neighbor will look in on you if you need it, he'll do this for you or that for you, and everybody's grief was your grief and everybody's joy was your joy. That's, I think, that's, those days are gone. You don't see it in Israel today either.
It's an extended family thing.
Yes, mm-hmm. That's gone. It's gone. Yes. Mm-hmm.